RadioInfluence.com.
When you are looking for the best box coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Box!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In the Trenches. My name is Ian Beckles, and for the next little while, we're going to be talking NFL football, predominantly Buccaneers. I'll bring up a little bit of the other things happening around the NFL as well. As Buccaneer fans, it was really same old song on Monday. And it was just, you know, it's unfortunate in a lot of ways. The game was Sunday. This is Tuesday, obviously, because Christmas was yesterday. The reason why it's the same old song is because they've lost 10 different ways this year. It's just, I asked somebody today, what do the Bucs do well? I've been asking that all year long. And there's really nothing they could hang their hat on, unfortunately. But when you're 4-11, I mean, I've been on some really bad football teams with half of the talent as these guys have, and we've won more games. So there has to be something wrong with the equation. Now, you know, it's impossible to snap your finger and just rebuild a football team, but it's possible now. It does happen. It happens around the league. Jacksonville turned around immensely in 1 year, but you look and they have some really legitimate football players out there. The San Francisco 49ers, they bring in Garofalo, and they win 4 in a row. John Lynch is doing some things over there, doing some outside-the-box type stuff, and starting to build a winner. You know, when they brought Garofalo in, at first, you know, from New England, at first I'm thinking, well, this might be the worst thing for Garofalo because he would have just sat behind Tom Brady the whole year, and then the free agency would have come up, and he would have made a lot of money, and he didn't have to prove himself. But if you go to San Francisco, now all of a sudden you have game film that can be bad. And he's gone there and been nothing but brilliant. And now John Lynch looks brilliant for bringing him in because at the end of the season, if the San Francisco 49ers want to keep him, they can do that. They can give him a transition tag. You can get him a franchise tag. It's going to cost him a lot of money, but if he was out in the free agency, it would have cost him a lot more money than that. So, you know, it's good that he's playing within a system now that he's learning, because even if he gets 8 games out of it this year, you know, he's going to be better off next year because he's already played within this system. And everybody wants to believe somebody is something, and the media is probably mostly at fault for this. Nick Foles over there with the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody know Carson Wentz went down a couple weeks ago, and Nick Foles comes out and he beats the Giants barely. So I watched the game last night, and you would have sworn Nick Foles was Joe Montana. I swear to God. The way they were talking about this guy, how developed he is and how great he is and blah, blah, blah. He's a backup quarterback. That's what Nick Foles is. Now, Garofalo is a different situation because he never really had a chance to beat anybody out. So he's sitting on the bench. New England won't let him go because, you know, he's an asset. He's obviously not going to bring out Tom Brady, not going to beat him out. Nick Foles has been here, there, and everywhere and had his chance of being the number one guy, and it never really stuck. So now that Wentz goes down, everybody's, you know, I hang out at Elmer's, and a bunch of Eagle fans are coming up to me, and they're saying, hey, do you think we could win the Super Bowl with Nick Foles? And I usually give them about 1 second, and I say, nope. If Nick Foles won a Super Bowl, I mean, that would be the biggest talk. That would be the biggest story ever in Super Bowl history. So no, because your quarterback's not good enough. Because once you get to this point of the season, you're not playing any slouches. You're not playing the Giants anymore, who have not won a game. Okay, this is another thing. People were so boo-hoo-y about the way Eli Manning was being treated. You can't treat a Hall of Famer like that. You blah, blah, blah. So after the big crying game went on and everybody got fired and they put Eli Manning back in, then the next week I heard everybody, oh, the Giants are going to start winning again. Eli Manning is back. They stink. Eli Manning stinks. They got shut out last week by Arizona. When's the last time Arizona shut anybody out? So, you know, it's amazing people's perception of things going on out there. Now, there's obviously, you know, being here in Tampa Bay, we're, you know, worried about what's happening here in our hometown. You know, watching the games on Sunday, Ian Rappaport comes out first thing saying that John Gruden is calling assistant coaches and basically saying that Dirk Cutter is dead man walking. I'm not sure about that because, you know, I'm not there behind closed doors. And you know what? After watching the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, I think the one place John Gruden would go would be Dallas, personally. I mean, as big as his ego is, and you know what? All head coaches have humongous egos, every last one of them. John Gruden to the Dallas Cowboys would be monstrous. It would be monstrous for everybody. Now, I'm going to let you know beforehand, Jerry Jones and John Gruden will not be able to coexist very long. I give it a year and a half, tops, and then their heads are going to be a-bumping. It's just not going to work, I'm telling you. And I don't know if the Buccaneers even want John Gruden back. They obviously can't comment on it because Dirk Cutter's still their coach. I personally think Dirk Cutter is still the coach here next year. I'm going to stick with that. I'm not going to change. And after watching that game a couple times, this is what I got out of the game, first of all. The Bucs are still fighting. Are the Bucs a smart football team? Nope. Are the Bucs a good football team? Hell no. They're not. Are they still fighting? In a weird way, they're still fighting. But at the end of that football game on Sunday, there's not a Buck fan out there that really thought they were going to win that game any time today. Because we've lost those games, everyone this year. At the end of the game, we're outplaying somebody. At the end of the game, we figure out a way to lose the game offensively or defensively every single time. And I mean this year, every single time. And watching that game, hoping the best, watching what the Buccaneers did in the first half. And I'm going to say this. I can't put my finger on it. Well, partially I can. Looking at this way this team is constructed, and I've said this numerous times, you can't win without good lines. If you, and this is a big if. This is a huge, put a capital I, capital F. If the Bucs had a good offensive line, and if the Bucs could rush the passer, the Bucs would be a good football team. Huge if. Huge. That's hard to do. But right now, I mean, obviously there's lots of injuries out there. So even if the Bucs had Ali Marpet at center, which I never really liked to begin with, I think Ali Marpet's a Pro Bowl guard, and they moved him to center, and then he became an average center. I didn't like the move. And if they had DeMar Dotson, and if they could somehow find a left tackle in Donovan, because Donovan Smith, which should probably be left guard, because left guards ain't worth a darn either. But if there's some way we could mess around next year and put an offensive line out there that's worth the crap, we can contend, man, I swear to God, because watching that Buccaneers team on Sunday against a really, really good Carolina team, the best player on the field was Jameis Winston. He was the best player on the football field, on both sides. Sorry, I'll take that back. The best player on the field is Luke Kuechly, okay? Luke Kuechly's probably top four middle linebackers to me that I've ever seen, and I've seen lots of them. Okay, you can't give him top. There's been lots out of there. Brian Urlacher and Ray Lewis, obviously. Singletary, Sam Mills, guys like that. Luke Kuechly is a special football player, no doubt. He's about as instinctive a middle linebacker you've seen in a long time and about as intelligent as I've ever seen. He takes very few missteps, and he has a nose for the ball, and he's tough as all hell. But other than Luke Kuechly, the next best football player on the field, I think, was Jameis Winston, because Jameis was out there making his teammates better. Because when you're messing around and you're throwing to Martino and Bobo Wilson, who the hell is Martino and Bobo Wilson? I've heard the names before, but those aren't the guys that I want my quarterback throwing to with 2 weeks left. And it's a mash unit out there. I could see, you know, when it's the 15th and 16th week of the season, your body hurts, man. and I'm seeing guys just peeling themselves off that field. And it's hard to get yourself up for that last game or last couple games when, you know, you're 4-10. But I'm going to commend the Buccaneers for playing hard. I really am. But there's a flaw in something on our team, because the Bucs at times this year have played well offensively and lost. And there's times where they played well defensively and lost. In a weird way, it looked like they were playing well offensively on Sunday, and they had no points. When the Panthers have 78 yards in the first half and you're losing by 3 points, something's wrong with the equation. Something. I don't know what it is. But this Buccaneer team can't seem to put it together. They can't put it together. They don't have playmakers. Man, you need playmakers. I don't think our playmakers were allowed to be playmakers this year. When I see Mike Evans out there, and first of all, he has a big problem with pushing off right now, because once you get called two weeks in a row, I tell you what does happen. Just like football players, referees go and they do their homework. So if the referees are going to be refereeing the Bucs next week, they're going to go do their homework and watch maybe the last couple games and see if they can get some ins and outs. And one of the things they're going to see is Mike Evans pushes off a lot. There's been, I can't think of a great receiver that didn't push off. All the great ones did. But you got to do it, you got to be inconspicuous about it. He's a big physical guy. He just can't push and displace defensive backs. Now, Jameis, who's been pretty darn accurate the last couple of games. There was a question about his accuracy, and there should have been, a few games before he got hurt and then a couple of games after he got hurt, like right while he was hurt, and then he took some time off. Sometimes, the thing is, with most NFL quarterbacks, can make every single throw on the football field, literally. But, there's a pass tree and a route tree. Every NFL quarterback can make every throw. That doesn't mean they make them in the game, because certain throws, you have to kind of think guys open. And if you don't see them right away, it ain't going to happen. The problem was the game was moving really fast for Jameis. And I said this when he sat out. I think he sat out 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, one of the two. But I said, sometimes you watch from the outside looking in as a coach and things slow down. And it looks like things are slowing down for Jameis a little bit. And it also looks like he's doing a whole lot with his legs and making better decisions. He still has to take care of the football, though. You can't put the football on the ground. Now, let's talk about Jameis and Jameis's demeanor. First of all, if you're a fan of Jameis or not, I would hope that you like his demeanor as a competitor. I think sometimes Jameis gets overhyped, or he gets himself overhyped, and it leads to a detriment at times. At the end of the game, I have absolutely no problem with him acting the way he did after the game. He's somebody who's dying to win. He's dying to win. At the end of the game, his left tackle lets him down. Somebody gets in, gets a sack. The ball comes out. He gets the ball, and they don't give it to him. Now, I was going to ask what would happen if that happened to Tom Brady, but let me say this. It wouldn't happen to Tom Brady. Tom Brady gets more respect than that. There's no way the referee's going to point the other way when Tom Brady's underneath with the ball. It's not going to happen. So Jameis Winston should be pissed that he's not getting the same respect that a lot of other quarterbacks are getting. Straight up. And if it did happen to Tom Brady, how do you think Tom Brady would react afterwards? The problem is people have a different perception of Tom Brady, and they would be okay with him going ballistic afterwards, which I was okay with. I'm okay with people wanting to win and letting other people know it. Now, the big faux pas, the big blunder in the game was at the end of the game, when the game's on the line and it's 4th-and-3 on the 5-yard line, and, Cam Newton comes up. Let me walk through this. Everybody knows it's going to be a hard count at that point. You're looking for free yardage. Everybody knows it's going to be a hard count. In a defensive huddle, the leader should be saying, don't get drawn offside. Please, sit down. Watch for it. They walk up there, and 4th-and-3 on the 5-yard line. I want you guys to think for a second. Those are three of the hardest yards on the football field, okay? Because there's no room. You just can't line up in a goal line formation and get 3 yards from the 5 yard line. That ain't gonna happen, or it shouldn't happen anyways. So that's almost a must pass situation, almost. And you're gonna jump offside on a hard count that wasn't that damn good, because you could hear it, you know, on the television. It wasn't that damn great. And to have Chris Baker half ass out of his stance and let somebody go and put their hands on him and for us to get the penalty, and then a comeback to 4th and 1, which becomes way more manageable than a 4th and 3. Veteran players don't do that. Veteran players on good football teams don't do that. Can you picture the Patriots doing that? You know, Patriots don't do that. That's why they win 11 or 12 games every single year. And for you guys that thought the Patriots were going to suck this year, again, you're wrong. Go back to beginning this in the trenches. I let you guys know you're wrong. They're going to figure out a way to win. Always. They always do. And there's still some players on the Buccaneers that still want to win and that are still fighters. Jameis is one of them. Quan Alexander is another. I was on the air this morning with Johnny B on 102.5 The Bone, and I asked Johnny B, who are the badass tough guys on our team? And I would give Jameis one, and Quan Alexander is the other one. I don't really have another. I mean, badass tough guys. You know, you could be a good football player and not be a tough guy, but you need some tough guys. You need tough guys. You know, when you're the, you know, Ravens, you need T. Sizzle. You need Terrell Suggs. You need Ray Lewis. You need guys rushing the passer. We don't have that. Now, people like Quan Alexander and Jameis Winston are tired of players not giving a shit. And for somebody like Chris Baker to come in and was supposed to assume a leadership, this is one thing you can't do as a leader. You can't lead when you don't do nothing. When I mean Chris Baker does nothing, no, sorry, he does stuff. He gets pushed off the ball a lot. He gets pushed off the ball a lot. And the rest of it ain't worth a darn either. I mean, we just watched 15 games, and if anybody can tell me two plays Chris Baker made, I can think of one in 15 weeks. Other than that, like, literally, he's done absolutely nothing. Nothing. Leadership to me is when you put that film on Monday and you're balling out. That's leadership. But to be jumping off sides in that situation, you're letting the whole organization down. Okay, put somebody in there that gives a crap. So that's where they are at the Buccaneers right now. And like I said earlier, in a weird, funny way, after watching the games, knowing that, you know, Mike Evans is beat up, knowing that DeSean Jackson's not in, knowing that we don't have two of our best offensive linemen, we're beat up all over the place. It makes me want to think of next year. We have some pieces. We have some pieces, you know, that can fill the voids. Or, you know, we have some pieces in place. It's just a few voids here and there. But unfortunately, when you talk about offensive and defensive linemen, if you're Dirk Koetter and Dirk Koetter is a coach next year, you know, it sounds easy to say, let's just go get lines. It's way harder than that. First of all, it's very expensive, and I don't really want to hear about, you know, the Bucks not spending money because they make ridiculous amounts of money. But it's hard just to go out and buy an offensive line. It's hard. It really is. Because you can get a player that's good on one team and bring him on another team and he may not fit. It's like that really with any position. But the Bucks can use, I think they put Ali Marpet back at guard where he belongs. Put Donovan McSmith, move him from left tackle to left guard. Maybe move DeMar Dotson from right tackle to left tackle. Maybe that, I don't know. I've never seen DeMar Johnson out there. I see him all the time. He looks like a left tackle. He doesn't look like a right tackle. Donovan Smith really looks more like a right tackle because he's kind of big and bulky. And DeMar Dotson's kind of more sleek, has a good pass blocker. That's more what a left tackle would do. So next year when they go into the season, the offensive line can't look the same. It can't. It's got to be considerably different. And defensive line-wise, I think they throw a bomb on it. I think they throw a bomb on it. Really, seriously. Well, I know everybody's still in love with Gerald McCoy and whatever. It's all good. But to me, you know, when you want to build your team around somebody, like once again, toughness is important. And a lot of people are here praising Gerald for playing yesterday. And When I talk about toughness or, you know, playing hurt and all those kind of things, like, I played in this city, so the tape is there. And what I don't understand is, I'm going to commend Gerald for playing yesterday. Great, you played. Congratulations. That's what you're supposed to do. But now I got to go back a couple weeks and wonder, why are you crying on the football field? And why is all your teammates consoling you if you only missed one game? That's the part I don't get. It's too much about him. If you're out of the game, fine. Go to the locker room. Do what you got to do. If you can't play, fine. But don't be crying and have everybody have to console you in the middle of the game. And, oh, my God, we're going to – and then miss one game and come back and make two plays and then and be, you know, flexing. Great. But that's – to me, that's not something you build around. If it's money you're worried about, give him to somebody while he's still let somebody else – pay for Gerald McCoy, and let's get something for him, whether it be picks, I don't know what it is. Whether it's a player, we could use a player or two. But having Gerald McCoy, and the ironic part is last week on In the Trenches, I compared Gerald McCoy to Evan Longoria. And I said, both of them need to be traded because with them, we're not accomplishing anything. And their salaries don't make sense in this situation. And what do? The Rays go out and trade Evan Longoria. Now, oddly, they brought in Denard Spanner, who gets paid the same amount. So, obviously, there's more into it. But having one person make that much money on the Bucks as a pass rusher and doesn't get sacks, to me, doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. So, and then other than that, a defensive line, I don't even – it's just one guy here. And I've never heard of half these guys. I see Golston sometimes. He hasn't really done anything all year long. It's just a mix and match, but when you try to go and improve your lines, especially in 1 year, because we all know Dirk Cutter doesn't have more than one more year. If Dirk Cutter doesn't make the playoffs next year, he's gone. He knows that. Jason Light actually got an extension in the summer, so he has one more year, but it doesn't mean he's going to be here. He could still be fired. Everybody knows that. But to improve your line in 1 year, you got to go to free agency, and you got to spend money, period. You know, somebody like Jacksonville Jaguars, they go out, they spend all that money on Calais Campbell. Hey, tell you what, it worked. He brought a little attitude and a little funk to the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's when we need somebody that's going to bring attitude. But you can't just go into the draft and think that you're going to draft a good defensive line. It doesn't work that way because rookies don't make a difference. They don't. Give me a rookie receiver sometimes. Give me a rookie DB. Give me a rookie running back. Rookie D lineman. Rookie O lineman. Mm-mm. Rookie quarterbacks. Nope. That's not the spot. So right now the Bucks have to, like, to me, I would like for them to be some kind of an advisor to Jason Light, because it's obvious that whoever is, you know, making these picks, whether it's Shelton Quarles or whoever it may be, they're making mistakes from talent. We're not that talented. Because Jason Light's been here a long time to not have found the pass rusher. You have to find the pass rusher sometimes by accident. So, to me, improving both lines has to be precedent over everything in the offseason. And I mean everything. A kicker as well. Listen, at the end of a game, you got a 51-yard kick. I watch the NFL all day long. I got some news for you. 51-yard kick is a chip shot these days. That's not a long kick anymore. You know, and, you know, Patrick Murray, you know, we haven't been good in kicking. And you're going to give up a kickoff return for a touchdown on the road against a good football team? You're going to lose football games. We don't get after the passer, and it doesn't seem like we're protecting the passer a whole lot. There could have been 8 or 9 sacks in that game. Jameis Winston got out of a few. Now, he's still sloppy with the ball. I'm not real happy with that. But I know on the first sack, the first strip sack, that's Jameis, man. That's Jameis being young, and his internal clock wasn't going off. And sometimes when you try to make a whole lot out of nothing, you mess up. When you see great quarterbacks or seasoned quarterbacks, it gets to a time where their clock goes off, and they'll throw the ball out of bounds. That's what Jameis doesn't have. Jameis has fight in him, and he always thinks he can make something out of a broken play. And sometimes he does, and sometimes he puts the team in a really bad situation. And he's done both this year. So it's those it's those questionable plays that has us still worrying about Jameis. You know, as far as him, I think he's answered a lot of questions from his accuracy in the last couple weeks. I think he's answered a lot of questions about his leadership. Even though people are going crazy about him going off at the end of the game, I have no problem with that. I really don't. Jameis has five games this year with 300 or more yards, which to me can be deceiving at times because, you know, when you throw for 300 and some yards in a loss, it's sometimes those are some empty yards. Because we, with all that being said, we didn't score a lot of points yesterday. That's why I'm just wondering what it is that we're lacking. Statistically, we're out there. And just imagine this. When you look at some of these teams that excel, whether it's the Saints, who had a couple of years of down years when they wanted Drew Brees to do the whole thing. Now, all of a sudden, the Saints get two good running backs. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are unbeatable. Drew Brees, unbelievable numbers, but not being asked to do that much. Can you imagine Jameis Winston had a good running game and a good line? How much better would he be? Because he's pretty damn good right now without a running game and without a line. Could you imagine? The only thing for me, and this is on Dirk Cutter, as many times as I see Mike Evans go up and get a football and moss somebody, can I see it a little bit more? I don't see that enough. Especially when DeSean Jackson is out. That I'm going to put on Dirk Cutter, okay? Because I just, there's things out there that when I'm watching other defenses and I'm watching other offenses, like I'm seeing some innovative stuff. I'm not seeing anything real innovative on either side of our offense or defense. Yesterday, I don't know, two or three times, the Carolina Panthers lined up a linebacker in an A-gap and he blitzed straight up the field and nobody blocked him. Now, I'm telling you, I don't care what the protection is and what the situation is, you can't let somebody free from the A-gap. The A-gap is right over the center. Your play's not going to work. It never does. And that to me is, those are missed assignments by guys that are out of place. Is that Dirk Cutter's fault? I don't know. It's coaching, or we have the wrong players in there, one of the two. So that was a game on Sunday that was winnable. And Bucks fans, we should have won. That should be a shirt. We should have won, Buck fan. Because we could have won again. What we should have won? Not really. Not really. When you're giving up 103-yard kickoff returns, when you're jumping offside when it's 4th-and-3, no, you shouldn't win. You could have won. And we have Cam Newton, who was banged up. And after he got banged up, was throwing the ball differently. He wasn't throwing the ball that well at all. If Cam Newton gets healthy, I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't want to run into Carolina in the playoffs because if Cam Newton, who really hasn't run a lot this year, if you give him the ability to run, boy, that puts a lot of pressure on a lot of defenses. And I don't care who you are, that's a tough thing to stop. And to me, looking at all these games, boy, that the NFC is wide open. I don't know who's going to make it from the NFC. We may have a big shock come whoever comes out of the NFC this year. Not sure if it ain't going to be the Rams, who look pretty damn good. 3 weeks ago, I probably would have picked the Eagles. But like I said, things change all the damn time. And I know one thing. It's not going to be the Buccaneers. And before the end of the season, or right there afterwards, there's going to be shakeup again. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm getting tired of shakeups. I really am, because shakeups aren't conducive to winning. You know, when you take something, you shake it up, it usually takes a while for it to settle. And, you know, I don't even know we're shaking up anymore because it's been a long-ass time since we won any games around here, that's for sure. If you guys want to email me and talk to me about the Buccaneers or ask me any questions, you can contact me, Ian Beckles @Radio Influence. I also have another podcast, Flavor in Your Ear, that comes out Friday morning. So that's a little more pop culture and stuff like that. But I really appreciate you guys listening into the podcast. I'm very passionate about a few things, and the Buccaneers are one of them. Another thing I'm passionate about is these football players that I still keep on putting back on the football field with concussions. Julius Peppers goes out with a concussion, misses probably 3 or 4 plays, goes back on the football field. You know, last night I'm watching T.J. Yates go out with a concussion, and they brought in some other dude that I don't even know his name, Meineke or something like that. He gets a concussion, and then they put T.J. Yates back in. I mean, the NFL just fined the Seahawks $100,000 for putting, you know, Russell Wilson back out there. There's only one problem. The Seahawks made $300 million last year, at least. That's the bottom line. They probably made substantially more. What the hell is $100,000 going to do to them, really? But what's it giving to Russell Wilson, who later on in his life, you know, may be in big, big trouble? What about Russell Wilson? That's the person that needs to be compensated, you know, not the league. The league keeps on making more money, and that's it. So I have to get that off my chest because that's something that really pisses me off. But we have one more game left this year. We're going to continue to do In the Trenches because there's always football going on. There's always other games going on, and it's off season, and, you know, it's all good. People like to talk football. You look at some of these shows, and they have the NFL Network and everything that goes on all year long because we love football, and football doesn't go off. When hockey season's done, it's done. Baseball season's done. Even during the season, it's done. But football lasts, and it never, ever stops. But I appreciate you guys listening to In the Trenches. It's been Ian Beckles. Have a wonderful week, and go Bucks, I guess. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter, at Ian Beckles, for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been In the Trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
There's no one true fit answer on how to defend a quarterback. It does depend upon the offense, the skill sets of the quarterback. But a rule of thumb is you want to blitz a rookie or a young guy and cover a veteran. You saw the Dolphins the other night do a great job with coverage. And the pressure got home on Tom Brady, and it made it difficult. Blitzing a veteran quarterback is normally not the direction to go, as they are able to get the football out quicker. Young quarterbacks don't like the blitz. They don't recognize it. They get confused by the protection change. Big reason why young quarterbacks get hit a lot, because of lack of recognition. It's like anything else. You don't know how to deal with certain circumstances because you haven't seen it. You know, the best way to explain it, people think it's an intelligence issue. It's not. Imagine if you're out in sales. I don't know, you're selling insurance or some other product. You get asked a bunch of questions. You got to know your product. But, you know, if you've done it for 5-10 years, you've probably been asked more different types of questions about your product, and you have a better way in which to go about answering it because you're more familiar with how to deal with that. You've had more experience in the field. Opposed to somebody who's done it only 5 years or 3 years, or maybe in their 6 months of their job, they don't have that experience. It's no different than playing quarterback. The biggest issue is experience, repetition, seeing it. So that's the first thing that you want to understand is the young quarterback hasn't seen as much. So you try to bring them a little bit more pressure, and that usually is more effective.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.